Hey everyone, I'm Anne Bogle, and this is What Should I Read Next, episode 35. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on this show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest. Before we meet our guest, have you followed What Should I Read Next on Instagram? I post about the books recommended on the podcast, pictures from the guest each week, bookstores I'm visiting on vacation, and more. Last week's guest Rose was having a great time chatting in the comments and getting additional book recommendations from listeners of the show. So why don't you come join the fun on Instagram? Again, our handle is What Should I Read Next.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Today's guest is Catherine Willis Pershey. Catherine's a friend and an author. In fact, I just read her forthcoming book, Very Married at the Beach. That's high praise for any book, in my book. Catherine has recommended some great titles to me in the past, and I was excited and a little nervous to return the favor in this episode. We talk all about internet brain, redemption stories, and books that approach deep human experiences through the back door. Let's get to it. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Catherine, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a pastor. I'm an associate pastor at a United Church of Christ congregation near Chicago, and I'm a writer. My first book came out a few years ago, and my next book comes out in September, Very Married.
I can't wait to read that one.
Well, thank you.
Okay. How did you happen to become a reader?
A reader. Wow. I mean, as long as I can remember, I just loved being able to escape into a book and read all kinds of different books. I was really into biographies as a kid. I think a lot of kids are. Just, you know, stepping into another world.
And what role does reading have in your life now?
It's a lot of things, but I think it's become my primary spiritual discipline. I do other spiritual practices, but none as religiously as reading.
I like it.
So to speak.
Exactly. Okay. Here's how this works. You're going to tell me three books you love, one book you hate, and what you've been reading lately, and then we'll talk about what you should read next.
Sounds good.
Let's start with your favorites. Tell me three books you love.
Well, one of my favorites is Consider the Birds by Debbie Blue. Mm-hmm. I've been a huge fan of Debbie Blue for some years now, and Consider the Birds is her last book. It's a quirky book. It's essays about... the subtitle is A Provocative Guide to Birds of the Bible. I think it's probably helpful that they put that word provocative in there, because otherwise you might think it's going to be this, like, I don't know, something completely that it's not. Mm-hmm. It's a quirky, unexpected book. She's a phenomenal writer. From the start, one of the phrases that has stuck with me so much, she describes a peacock as being like an abstract painting that sings and lays eggs. I was like, okay, you had me at your description of a peacock. Mm-hmm. They're not like these vaguely spiritual essays. They're really well researched and detailed. I mean, I'm not even like into birds, and I ended up fascinated by like what she uncovered about the vulture. And then she does these amazing connections between really sort of human nature. And so it ends up being less about birds than about sort of the nature of humans and how weird we are. And so it's a great book.
How weird we are.
Yes, we are quite weird.
I like
we think
it.
Birds are weird, but we are just as weird as birds.
Okay, what's book two?
Okay, book two is, I think I actually recommended this to you before, and I'm pretty sure you've read it, Ursula Under by Ingrid.
I have.
Yes. And did you read it because I told you to?
I totally did.
I was hoping you would say yes.
Because you were gushing about it, like really hardcore gushing.
I have not stopped gushing about this book. It's a novel, and it's so basically, it's kind of hard to describe, to be honest.
You know what? This has been on the podcast. I recommended this in one of the very first episodes to JC Ferdicchio.
The story is this, you know, this two-year-old girl has fallen into a well. And so it's this, you know, it's really stressful, honestly, as a parent. Like, it's a stressful book. But then, like, during the time that she's in the well, the whole novel is this going back and telling the stories of all of her ancestors. And so, like, it's, you know, different continents. I mean, you have ancestors in Finland and China, and then, you know, they travel and it takes place in Michigan. And so it's all like coming down to like the story of how she came to be. It's like Ingrid Hill, like, opens this trap door and takes you back in time. And so it's a historical novel, but like there's a chapter in every epoch of history. So, I loved it. I found it incredibly exhilarating and moving as a novel. And yeah. Also just how did she do that? It's such a complicated book.
It's so complicated. And you were just saying that Debbie Blue drew unusual connections. Like, I really felt that way with Ursula Under too. Like, the way she draws connections between people's lives who don't even know they're connected, but she tells you they are and how. And it kind of blew my mind.
Yes, it's definitely a mind-blowing book.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, honest answer. Did you love every page? Because there were some epochs that I skimmed hard.
I will say I had a really hard time getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I persevered is because it was a book club book. And I used to be really, really good about always reading my book club books. Now I've under book deadline, I'm not as good. But so I did stick with it because of that. You know, not every section was as fascinating, but you have this sense that like, well, at the end of this chapter, we're on to the next people. I didn't really slag through it mm-hmm. as much as I know some people kind of didn't love the always starting over again feeling at the beginning of every new chapter.
Mm, yeah, like you meet a whole new cast of characters and
yeah.
you have to
but
get oriented
to
all
see
over.
All the connections and then it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What's book three?
Okay, book three is another nonfiction book about cholera. So, you know, keep it.
Okay, yeah, tell us more.
The Ghost Map by Stephen Johnson. It is very odd. And I actually suggested this book for my book club. And one of my friends ended up reading it at the pool. And she was like totally grossed out by like, thinking about water and, you know, pathogens in water and like wanted to like tell all of her children to get out of the fountain. So it takes place in Victorian London, and it's basically the story of how they solved how cholera is transmitted. Mm-hmm. And it was during a horrible outbreak of cholera in London. And there's these two heroes of the story. John Snow was a doctor, and then Henry Whitehead was a local pastor. And it kind of took both of their perspectives and then them happening to come together and share what they were figuring out to identify that it's waterborne, that you get it by drinking water that's contaminated. Johnson is such a good storyteller, even though it's nonfiction. It's one of those books that just totally reads like a novel. And I ended up like getting weepy about these, you know, anonymous Victorian Londoners dying, you know, alone in their rooms. I mean, he really treats it like a novel, and I just loved that. So.
Okay. I know I've read something about the cholera epidemic before, and now I'm wondering if it was that, and just so long ago, I don't remember, because this is sounding very familiar.
I actually reread it last summer, and I ended up reading aloud some of it to my husband in the car. We were on a car trip, and I don't remember why. I mean, he was bored, and I ended up reading it aloud. So I have like really spent some time with this cholera book.
A good sign, I think, that it's a good one. Okay. Catherine, tell me what you hate.
Yes, the book I hate. The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Eugenides.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more.
The strange thing is I read it after Middlesex, and I consider Middlesex a phenomenal novel. And so I think part of it was just the like disorientation of, you know, the disappointment of not loving, you know, the other novel that was out at that point. It's just so depressing. And I think it probably like has this meaning that I wasn't picking up. So to me, it was just like people dying, repeat like over and over again. And I didn't even really love like the sentences. I didn't love it on a sentence level either. And again, in Middlesex, he's such a great writer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not a fan.
There are 5 sisters in that family who commit suicide one after the other. Are there not? Is that right? I haven't actually read it. I've only read the marriage plot by him, and I've been meaning to read Middlesex for ages. Middlesex. I think I do. And I've been torn on the virgin suicides.
Yeah.
Because of descriptions like yours.
Yeah. Not at all a fan.
How are you in general about going kind of dark?
I mean, I can go there, but I guess ultimately I like there to be some sort of redemption. And maybe that is actually what was missing from that from that story for me, was there was like nothing redemptive. It was just, they killed themselves and then the next one killed herself, you know? Okay. So I can go dark if there's like redemption in the end.
Okay. What are you reading now, Catherine?
I am reading Brown Girl Dreaming by, is it Jacqueline Woodson?
Yes.
Yes. I'm about halfway through. It's lovely. It's a memoir in verse, and it's about her experience of growing up, in part in the South, but now they've moved to New York City.
Uh-huh. What made you pick that up?
Actually, I picked it up because I've intentionally been reading more about race and racism in the United States. And so there was that in the back of my head. But I also just Skyped with a class of 5th graders about memoir. They were doing a series on learning about memoir and writing their own memoirs. And I thought that was awesome. But I could not think of very many memoirs for children, you know. And that is a young adult memoir. I mean, even though it's written again in verse, it's still memoir.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I picked it up just to have read it, or at least started it before I did that conversation, which was so fun.
Oh, it sounds so fun. It sounds fun. Okay. Catherine, is there anything you want to be different in your reading life?
Yes. The attention thing is a problem for me. You know, I definitely have noticed that reading shorter things and just, you know, internet brain is starting to affect me. And so I want to carve out more space where I just, you know, sit and read for, you know, a solid 40 minutes without checking email or, you know, clicking on something else. So just wanting to add some more discipline of attention to my reading life.
I hear you on that. All right. I have some ideas in mind. We'll get to them right after the break.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back, and you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia, and even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Readers, welcome back. Catherine, you chose an interesting assortment of books. So on the surface, they don't seem to have a lot in common, but here's what I think brings them together. I can totally see You're an author. I can totally see each of these authors sitting down in a pitch meeting with their agent or their publisher, or, you know, even having coffee with a friend and saying, I have an idea for this book and it goes like this. This is what's going to happen. And I can see their agent or publisher or friend listening and being like, really? Are you sure that's a good idea?
Oh, that's true. They all have like terrible elevator speeches.
Terrible. Awful elevator speeches. So for all of these, the book isn't really about what the book is about. Like, Consider the Birds is about birds, kind of, not really. Like, that's not her point. And Ursula Under is, I mean, it is about a girl who falls down a well. And there are, you know, the rescue people and there's a climber and she's down a well. But that is so not the point of the book. And, you know, you said, I read this book about cholera. Like, you're all excited. It's just a jumping off point. So these books all have strong themes. And I feel like the author has taken pains to, instead of address it head on and say, like, I want to talk about religion or, you know, human suffering and redemption. They've all gone through the back door. So I'm sure that every book you read doesn't share that thread. But I think there's a whole lot of good books that do, that make you read this book about some topic like, I don't know, spelunking or worm composting that you had no idea you could care about as much as you do by page like 180. And I just thought it was really interesting that all your picks had that in common. Okay, so I'm looking for books that have an interesting concept, you know, that hook that draws you in, that makes you go, it's a book about what? And that the author then uses to talk about whatever it is she really wants to talk about. Or maybe she doesn't even know what she wants to talk about, but what underlying deep, you know, motives and themes are at the heart of the story about cholera. So let's see what you think of these. That redemption thing is throwing me, though, because I love a good redemption story. However, these really interesting concepts that are coming to mind are all, they all have their dark side. Okay.
I can handle it.
I know you can.
I'm going to be brave.
I know you can, but I want to like make your reading heart sing. We'll see. Let's see what you think of these.
Okay.
Book one is The Telling Room by Michael Paternity. Are you familiar with this one?
I'm not.
Okay. I heard about it through Michael Pollan, who I think blurbed it and said a bunch of like crazy superlative things about how it was amazing and would change your life. So this is narrative nonfiction. The subtitle tells you a lot and gives you a hint at what I was talking about, like through the back door. So it is a tale of love, revenge, betrayal, and the world's greatest piece of cheese.
Oh,
right. Right. Didn't see that coming. So the seed for this story was planted 25 years ago when the author was, I think, a creative writing student at Michigan, and he happened upon a description of the world's best cheese in some copy from Zingerman's Deli, that famous place in Ann Arbor. So I think he was working, I think he was just copywriting stuff for them and was like, oh, this sounds interesting. So he was just really caught by the description. It's the kind of thing where you read something in a magazine and you're like, oh, one day I'd love to take me there. Tell me more. So there was some lone cheesemaker in this isolated region in Castile in Spain. And there was an ancient family recipe and old fashioned methods. And of course, it was a secret recipe and technique. It was just a glimpse into a whole other world for him. So then he went on to become a respected journalist for major publications. And years later, when he was searching for material to write about, he revisited that cheese in his mind as he had throughout the years. And he decides, I'm going to write about this. And he embarks on what turns into a 10-year journey to track down the cheesemaker in Spain. And the cheesemaker is this totally, I mean, you would invent him to write your novel, just totally larger than life, patriarch of a clan in this isolated part in Spain that just his paternity's account of how to get to this tiny village is your heart's in your throat a little bit, like, oh, will he make it? Because it sounds so perilous. He weaves the story through many years through the heart of Catalonian Spain with this really crazy cast of characters. His family moves there for a time. He's going back and forth between continents. And what he wants to tell is the story of the world's greatest piece of cheese. And he finds out it's not that straightforward after all. There is love and hate and lots of alcohol and wine and storytelling in, oh, the telling room is, it's a place where stories are told, but it's also a place where they test the, they might test the wine, but they also test the cheese. It's like a tasting room, basically. But because the men of the village spend so much time there, it's also where all the stories are told. So that's where the title
comes from. And the author just totally falls under the spell of this great storyteller, the cheesemaker Ambrosio, and the tiny village of Guzman. And he just unearths more about his family and the history. And of course, there's been this big rift between the guy and his best friend about the cheese. And it's so, I mean, it sounds like the stuff of folklore, but it's real. And throughout the process, it's interesting to hear he's very self-aware throughout the book that he's writing a book about the cheese. So you hear this bit about how he's lost the thread and he doesn't know what direction to take it in. So he goes back to his publisher again and has his contract extended again because the story is just not coming together. I think this would be a wonderful book club pick. And this is why, like, this is real time storytelling. He doesn't know how the story is going to end. And the last third of the book would make for excellent discussion fodder. Like, you're going to want to finish it and talk to somebody about it, because either the ending is going to feel perfect to you. And by ending, I mean the last third. It's either going to feel perfect or it's going to make you want to throw something. And no matter what side of the coin you land on, that's, there's just so much there to talk about.
Oh, that sounds great.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like something you might be interested in.
It does. Yeah.
Although you're going to want to pick up your kids and go to Europe, and he takes his family. So you're like, he did it. I can too. Let's go to Castile. Okay, book two, total change of pace. I am drawing on some backstory. I think you recommended The Age of Miracles to me forever ago. So I know you're good with YA, and that is where we're going to go. And this is kind of a heartbreaker. So for your redemption story. Did I tell you the title, Catherine? That's probably important. I wasn't going to tell you very much about the book on purpose, but I'll tell you the title. So it's All the Bright Places by Jennifer Niven. And when I read this myself, I took it to the beach, picked it up, opened the front cover, and started reading. Like, I don't know if I even read the jacket copy. And I think that might be the best way to approach it. And I know that you've read The Fault in Our Stars. Don't you really like that one?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the publisher describes this as The Fault in Our Stars meets Eleanor and Park, which...
That's another one.
That sounds about right to me. So this is Niven's eighth novel, but it's her first for YA readers. So she's, you know, proven, but she's doing a new audience here. And it's about two high school students, a boy and a girl. They meet on the ledge of the very high bell tower at their school, and they strike up a very unlikely friendship. So he's the classic bad boy. She is the good girl who's had something happen in her past that she's upset about. And just an unlikely friendship that goes in a direction you don't expect. And here's the reason I'm recommending it to you. So Niven is talking about really deep, serious themes. And if you read a little about the backstory of this book, you'll see how writing this book was Niven's own act of redemption for something she experienced tangentially because of something that happened to a friend. So there's definitely like she's writing with great purpose. And I don't want you to think like, oh, this book is so important, which means you won't enjoy it at all. But she definitely is approaching it from like seeking to redeem something tragic that happened in her past. So I know you'll be good with it. For the listeners, I would recommend reading some reviews first, just because I'm sure some people, this is going to be a trigger. The topic, and you do want to know more than Catherine would before you launch in. So just do a little research before you pick it up. But the concept. So this boy and this girl who, you know, strike up a friendship, and he is fun and exciting in a way that her like staid good girl self never has. And I think for a school project, they end up visiting all these like famously weird Guinness Book World Records type of places in rural Indiana. Like, they go to see like the Indiana's smallest amusement park, which is like this roller coaster in somebody's farm cornfield basically. And they go see the biggest can of paint and the like most meters of yarn wrapped up into one ball. So the story is propelled along by their adventures to see these really, really weird random things in rural Indiana. So it's about love and friendship, but it's these odd adventures that are moving the story actually forward in time. How does that sound?
It sounds compelling. I'll consider it.
You're going to go see what it's actually about.
I might.
Yeah. I heard that. Okay. Book three is We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves by Karen Joy Fowler. And For anyone who only knows Fowler from the Jane Austen Book Club, this is going to be a real surprise to you. And again, I'm recommending this because of its unusual premise and what she does with it. Catherine, do you know anything about this one or about Kieran Joy Fowler?
I think I've heard of it. The title sounds familiar.
Okay. Have you? Yeah, because it's catchy. The cover's kind of ugly, too. It's eye-catching, but not in an attractive way. It's like black and yellow. Okay, so on page one, we meet Rosemary, and she's a college student who's grieving the loss of her twin sister, Fern. And it's not her biological sister, but the two girls were raised together from birth until they're separated at age 5. And it's not till the end of the novel that you found out what happened to her sister and why and what happened in the interim. And again, I don't know what it is today. I'm keeping mum on one of the details of this relationship for fear you will all cry. Spoiler. I don't know. Do you like to know?
I don't.
Yeah.
I do not like spoilers. So no spoilers.
And even some really great books I've read, like The Goldfinch. I read the review and I knew what the book was about and was really surprised to see that if you read the book, you don't actually find out. So about the inciting incident doesn't happen until after page 100. I'm like, that's why did you tell me? So every review that has ever been written of We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves will mention this important detail about her sister, Fern. But when you're reading the book, you don't find out until about a quarter of the way in. And I think it's best that way. The jacket hints strongly at it, but you don't find out for sure until about 25% of the way in. So if you want to remain unspoiled, keep your research to a minimum.
Okay.
It's smart and sad and haunting. And while it's about a girl who grew up in a very unusual family situation and a family that's still in trouble because of it, like her brother is wanted by the FBI, and that's a thread that runs throughout the book. Of course, it's about more than that. Or we'd have, I don't know. I was going to say we'd have a sci-fi story, but those have deep meanings too. But this isn't that kind of genre novel. So it's about love and ethics and nature and nurture and really what it really means to be human. Like when you were describing Consider the Birds, I thought, oh, there's so many ways to get at human nature in interesting, nuanced ways. How does that sound?
That sounds very interesting. I may have to pick that one up. I mean, I may have to pick all of them up because I trust you.
Okay. Of those three titles, what do you think you'll read next?
You know, I'm torn because the cheese is very, you kind of had me at cheese, but now, and I was sure that was going to be my answer, but I think I might go with We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves.
Well, I was going to say read the cheese because I want to hear what you think about the cheese, but you know, I'd love to hear what you think about Rosemary and Fern as well.
I think I'm in a place where I need a novel too. So that's also swaying me toward one of the novels.
That is a real thing.
It is. I read so much nonfiction. Novels are good for me.
Well, I'm happy to help. Thanks for talking books with me today.
Thank you so much.
Hey, readers. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Catherine today. Please head to the podcast site to let me know what you thought of my recommendations and to share your recommendations for what Catherine should read next. That page is at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/35. Those are the numerals 35. And it's also where you'll find the full list of titles we talked about today. If you're on Twitter, let me know there at Ann Bogle. That is Ann with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.